Just as Gotika has explained, I met the movement in 1998. Actually, I sort of came and went for years. And in that time, I've had one meeting with Bante. I'm just hoping this is recording. I think so. It's not flashing, so it's recording. Okay. Sorry about that. So I've had one meeting with Bante. I've had one dream about him that I can remember. And I have seen him from a crowd while he blew out his birthday candles, as it happens for the last time. And then he came into the shrine tent where we were attending an order gathering. I think that was 2018, wasn't it? For the last time. Yeah. So obviously, I haven't had a personal face-to-face relationship with Bante like some order members from the early days or those who've lived with him. And I expect that many of us here, in fact, probably most of us here, have not had that kind of direct relationship with him. And yet, here we are, we're all sitting here. So is there anybody here that's had that sort of close-up personal relationship? So my first awareness of Bante was in Croydon, and I saw a photo of him on the shrine. And in the photo, he was wearing a suit. And I wondered back then what a fairly old man with a suit on was doing on a shrine alongside a mysterious-looking Buddha Rupa. I couldn't really work it out, and I felt a little bit confused. So I asked someone who he was, and they explained, but I didn't think much about it after that for a long time. I guess at that time I had very little understanding or appreciation of the fact that he'd started the movement, and that the shrine room, the drop-ins, the meditations that everyone was benefiting from wouldn't have been there without him. But it just took me a long time to really sort of put two and two together, I guess. Yeah, I came to understand that gradually. Anyway, that was my first meeting with Bante, photo of him on the shrine. Then my dream. So in my dream, this was around 6 months after my ordination. It was a very strong dream. He walked over to me. And he was an old man in my dream, just like he was at the time. And he looked at me and he said, hello. And I said, do you know me? And he said, of course I know you, Amritavani. You've been ordained into the order that I founded. And I woke up from that dream and I just felt really peaceful. I'm not sure why. I felt taken in. I felt taken in by Bante in my dream. And I talked to a few other order members about this. And they encouraged me to take this very seriously, that I'd seen him in a dream. So watch out for your dreams. And then I met him face to face in 2017 during my post-ordination retreat. It was very ordinary. We chatted a bit. I got really nervous. I couldn't think of what to say, even though I had planned things to say. I forgot my words. I felt a bit awkward. and I guess, you know, I just thought, well, he's probably really used to that. And he was very still. And he was very present. And I thought, I've never met a person of that age in particular that was so present. And I think what struck me the most at this meeting was that he was taking this strong interest in my life. I wanted to talk to him about his life, but he really wanted to know about me. And he asked me about my husband, and he was really glad to hear that my husband had become a Mitra. And he asked me how I found it having a meditation practice with children around. And he was really encouraging about that. And, yeah, he was smiling. I think looking back, what he was doing, he was exemplifying how to take another person in. And I felt like I was somebody in the neutral stage of his metta practice. As I say, it was quite an ordinary experience. But something that he said to me did really stand out in my mind, and I wanted to share that with you, to keep that kind of, to keep it alive. I feel as though this talk isn't about death, it feels like about, it's about life. So he asked me how I'd found ordination, and I told him that it had turned things upside down for me. You can come and ask me about that after if you want. He replied, "Ah, yes, and it will continue to turn upside down again and again and again." And I hadn't considered that. Perhaps naively, I'd imagined that the turning had happened, and that was that. This has really stayed with me, and I can tell you, he was right. I'm lucky to have met him. For future generations, this will never be a possibility. You could say it is a blessing to have had direct contact with him. So I think it's really good for us to talk about our meetings with him, as it's a way of keeping him alive after his death. That was my third meeting. The last time I saw him, as I mentioned, was when he blew out his candles on his huge birthday cake. It was raining on that day, and he was surrounded by lots of order members, all with their umbrellas up. It was quite a scene. And he apologised for the rain, which made me chuckle, and I recognised in that his slightly impish sense of humour that he has when we sometimes hear in his talks. And then, a bit later on, during the handover of the International Order convener, mid-event, he suddenly asked if he could circumambulate the Padmasambhava shrine. He was wheeled around by one of his carers, and he asked to stop in front of the shrine, and he bowed. It felt like a poignant moment to see one's teacher bowing before the shrine to the Buddha, and I felt really happy to see that. My teacher, the man, the human being, old, coming to the end of his life, bowing to the Buddha, his teacher, our teacher. Bhante was the man who introduced me to the Buddha. And there is a painting by Aloka that you might know. I'm sure it used to be out there, where Bhante holds out his hand. Behind him is this kind of mysterious-looking background. And that painting has always meant to me something like he's inviting me into the mystery. And I think that's what Bhante has done for us. He's invited us into the mystery. So that painting is him inviting us into the mystery, but on this occasion he turned round towards the Buddha and he bowed. And then he was wheeled back out of the shrine tent through the doors, I think, into the rain. And that's the last time I saw him. And it just felt like some kind of full circle had happened. So I'm just going to talk to you a bit now about how I've been in, you know, things that have inspired me about him. So it's all the obvious things, I suppose, like how his presentation of the Dharma has been clear, how I'm grateful for the practices. And that's all true. But I thought I'd talk about something that since his death has become clearer to me. And it's quite hard to explain, but I'll try my best. So when Bhante died, there was a film that was produced by Clear Vision. And the film, it depicted him in various stages of his life. So there was kind of the monk, the hippie, the English gentleman, the old man, the friend, the child. And I saw this beautiful photo of him where he had a raven sitting on his knee and he just looked like a magician. So somehow it seemed to me that his changing faces took on a more notable significance, and it became clearer to me around his death that my relationship to him was a mythic one rather than a personal one. In other words, it had a strongly archetypal dimension. I mean, that had been there before his death, but his physical death made this dimension of my relationship to him come to light. And in my imagination, Bante's presence seemed to get stronger and bigger. Something mythic within Bante was calling to my longing for the mythic. It was the Dharma, and I'd been looking for that all my life. He, that English gentleman in a suit on the shrine, activated that. He helped activate the heart's longing in so many people through his rare understanding of the Dharma. I've been reflecting on this quite a bit. So what is the significance of my teacher having so many different faces which manifest through his talks and his writing? Well, firstly, it shows me not to have a fixed idea of who my teacher was. His changing faces allow me to relate to him in different ways. So in a sense, if he was just the typical guru wearing robes, surrounded by incense and chanting all the time, I'd have found that quite limiting. There have been some faces that I couldn't connect with easily, or that I have disliked, or found difficult to comprehend. But I could connect with the poet, the artist, the monk, the visionary. It's interesting. I think in a movement that is found in so many countries across the world and in a variety of cultures, it seems important that the founder has been able to shapeshift and appeal to different people. I don't mean to say that his faces suited all of the people all of the time, because they haven't. That would have been a huge task. And times and society has changed so much, not just since the movement started, but I'd say in the last 10 years in particular. But I think as a Sangha, if we wish, we now have the opportunity to represent who we truly are with our own changing faces, so that the movement has an even wider appeal. In a way, we just have to keep becoming who we are more truly, and we will represent something for someone if we do that. So for me, being a mother is one of my faces. It's one of them, and not the only one. And perhaps just being that as fully as I can, I will have an effect. I just have to leave that up to, well, I have to just not know what effect that will be. And Bante says in Milarepa and the Art of Discipleship, non-attachment has no meaning unless you are full-blooded enough to be capable of attachment and all that it involves. And this has been a very important teaching to me. That he says, we can practice the Dharma and live our lives fully. We're not a monastic order. We can be in the world and be full-blooded enough to understand what that involves. So think about your face now. What's your face at the moment? Perhaps you have the face of an artist, a nature lover, a photographer, a quiet introvert, a person in full-time employment, a nobody in particular. I like that one. An anagarika, Turkish, Polish, American, a single woman, a married man, retired, working in team-based right livelihood, working in the world, living in a community. Bante had many faces, and we have many faces, all of them of equal importance. He said, commitment primary, lifestyle secondary. I have a sense we are only on the brink of understanding what he meant by that. What are the implications for a Sangha that has so many faces looking in so many directions in the world if we truly embrace that? I feel quite passionate about that. That feels very strong to say in front of you all. One of the faces that has struck me and stayed with me is his connection to animism. Today we have, and if you don't know what that is, it will come to light. Today we have lost touch with animism. Science is king, and we tend to dismiss this dimension of our life. I have a sense of Bhante as shaman. Hannah encouraged me to put that line in. Sorry, Hannah. This is an extract from the Nature of Existence seminar, and it's called Seeing the Universe as Alive. So again, this is about life. This is Bhante now. I wish I could do his voice, because it's so distinctive, isn't it? It's when I read his writing, I do hear his voice, and more since he died, actually. It's strange. I'm not going to try and do an impersonation. Some years ago, when I was in Kalimpong, I penned a little defence of animism. I am sorry to say that it hasn't survived. It was never printed. No Buddhist magazine wanted it, of course, and then laughter in brackets. So it got lost. But sometimes I've wished that that little essay did survive. I made the point that if it was a question of choosing between a universe that was dead and a universe that was alive, the more Buddhistic alternative would be that the universe was alive. And we know, in relation to the Pali Canon, some scholars or some scholarly students of Buddhism, or scholarly Buddhist students even, have had some difficulty, the difficulty existing almost entirely in their own minds, of reconciling the so-called animism of certain passages of the Pali Canon with the Dharma itself. You know what I mean by the animism of the Pali Canon? When the Buddha is sitting under a tree and the tree spirit speaks to him, well, this is animism, pure and simple. It's so utterly unscientific. What the text is really saying is that the universe is alive. Well, why shouldn't the Buddha hear a voice from the tree speaking to him as he sat there? Well, what does that mean? He got a feeling for the tree, an empathy with the tree. He feels it is as alive. He feels that he is in communication with the tree. The tree is in communication with him. Surely, if you have any sort of life in you, any sort of sensitivity, this is how you should feel. Certainly when you are in contact with, say, the vegetable world. Maybe it's difficult to feel that brick and stone are alive. It's difficult to feel that steel is alive. I personally must admit, I can't feel that plastic is alive. I recognise that as a limitation. So I think this has shown me that actually my teacher has an ability to question what people mean by Buddhism. You know, he's stuck his head above the parapet and he's questioned things. And knowing this, I have felt a freedom in the Dharma life to take notice of things that sing to me of the Dharma, even if they're not a traditional way of seeing things. And secondly, it has been an invitation for me to look at the inanimate world in a different way. It's not that we all have to go around believing in tree spirits, although personally I quite like that, but we could start to see the universe as uniquely alive, because each object is a result of a flow of, not my talk, because I've lost my place now. Oh. So ham. Give me a minute. A flow of, any guesses? A flow of conditions. And finally, it shows that he was a teacher who was able to express that he does have limitations. And that is to say, he could not see plastic as alive, So I like that humour and that sort of being real part of him too. So, the night that Bante died, I came here to the Buddhist centre and we practiced the metta bhavana and the mindfulness of breathing. And as I tuned into the rhythm of my breath, the rise and the fall of my chest, I became aware of Bante. And in my mind's eye, I could see him lying dead on the hospital bed. The most unusual thing about seeing somebody who has died is that there is absolutely no movement, no breath, complete stillness. I took this in the meditation, and then I was aware that I was breathing and that the meditation I was doing, that we were all doing, was one that he had introduced us to and that had helped to turn people's lives around. And I see this each week when I do the drop-in class. It occurred to me that I was breathing part of his vision. So we were all, in a sense, breathing life into something he had taught us. We're kind of breathing for him. In a sense, Bante the man has died, but that which is deathless is the Dharma, and we are breathing life into that in our own unique ways. So let us breathe life into our inspirations that come from the Buddha, through Bante's teachers, to Bante, to us. That's it.